All right, here's the deal.
If HubSpot tripled the price, I'd be screwed.
The reason I would be screwed is because my entire company is run on HubSpot.com. My website, my email marketing, my dashboards, how I track my customers, literally everything. And if they tripled the price, I would pay them more money. And that's because the product is so freaking powerful. My entire company is built on it. And so if you're running a business and you want to grow faster, you want to grow better, you want to be more organized, check it out, HubSpot.com. All right, back to the pod.
Okay, everyone, we're going to have a little bit of a special episode. This first segment is 20 minutes, and then after that 20 minutes, it's going to be normal. But this first segment, I found this guy a couple years ago who runs this service that, frankly, I thought is kind of a scam. And Sean and I debated. Our friend Andrew was like, hey, you shouldn't have scammers on there. And I kind of agree with him. But this guy's story is incredibly fascinating. And I don't want to tell you too much about it. Just listen to it. But we found this guy in India, and he talked to us at midnight, his time in India. And frankly, I'm inspired by this guy. And I don't know if I agree with him or disagree with him, but I completely love the hustle. And I think that you guys should just give this a listen because it's super fascinating. Let us know what you think. Tweet at me, TheSamPar. Tweet at Sean. I don't actually know Sean's handle, but search Sean Puri. S-H-A-A-N space P-U-R-I, and let us know what you think.
Yeah, what's up?
What's going on?
We got a guest here with us, Sam. Abhishek is here. How are you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm doing good.
So we've been talking about something you built. We've mentioned it on the last couple episodes, but I'm glad you're here so you can tell people about what you've built and what it does, and we can debate a little bit about it. So Abhishek, can you give us the 1 minute version of what it is that you built?
So we are using a referral system to give customers the credits which they can use to their rides or their Eat orders now that Eat orders are available, so that they'll get discount on their every order, like up to the 50% of the order value.
Okay, so about 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I forget when you started, I got an email from a friend of mine who knows everything. He follows all the latest interesting stuff and he loves like hackers. And he goes, there's this guy, you're in India, right?
Yes, right.
He said, there's this guy in India, and I don't know how it works, but somehow he's accumulated hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars of Uber credits, and you can buy credits from him and ultimately get Uber rides for half off. So you know how Uber gives people $10 off their first ride and gives the referral person another $10 in credit. This guy somehow accumulated massive amounts of $10 credits, and you could buy his $10 credits for $5. Now, the thing that Sean and I debated was like, is this ethical? Is this wrong? Is this right? Who knows? And I think Sean was like, I think it's fine. But regardless, I think it's incredibly interesting because, and I want you, maybe you could explain how this works, but from my perspective, it seems like you've got a crew of like hundreds or thousands of people taking rides, and are you buying their credits from them? What are you doing? Yeah,
explain how it works.
It's a basic arbitrage. Like
arbitrage.
In India, yeah, arbitrage. In the US, they used to give like $10, $20 referral value. In India, they used to give 100 rupees, 200 rupees, 300 rupees in rupees. And in India, one ride cost, it starts from 50 rupees also. 50 rupees or 25 rupees. If you convert it to dollars, it will be like 30 cents, 40 cents, 50 cents max. So we are taking ride using that 50 cents. And in turn, Uber is giving us $10 in US.
So the US account is the referrer. So I refer an Indian rider. Indian rider takes a 30 cent ride. And I get a $10 credit because I'm a US customer and I get US credit rates. That's the idea.
Yeah, and so for listeners, 100 rubies equals $1.4.
Right.
But that's the easy part, Sean. The hard part is how are you getting all of these credits?
Yeah, who are your riders?
No, initially I was not planning for this. I started a blog just to promote the Uber service when they came in India about 6 years ago. They launched in India. And I was just curious how it's working, how it's not working. So I was sharing among our friends, and at the time they were giving around $10 in Indian value, about 600 rupees they were giving. But my ride cost was around 100 rupees, 100, 150 rupees from my flat to office.
Right.
So I was using for to use that money for myself, I started referring others. Then I started accumulating more value, like 6,000 rupees, 10,000, 20,000. Then I was not able to use all the credits for myself.
Right.
And
you're doing this blogger. Just by giving your link to your friends.
Yeah, I started with my friends. Then I started a blog, and blog got little popular. And because nobody was sharing that thing was totally new. So it was popular. And for blogging, I started blogging like few years back, around 10 years back. So all the learning, how to do SEO and other things, how to make it popular, a blog. I used those skills to make it popular, make this Uber thing popular, and started getting referrals. Then initially I was not selling to anyone, but I asked my friends to give me their referral code so that I can give credits to them for free, because I was not able to use all the credits right. for myself. So everybody was getting credits, and in like hundreds of rides, they were getting free.
This is
of
basically
rides
because Uber, like kind of, They translated the $10 worth of credits to India, even though the rides were 10 times cheaper. And so that was the initial reason you were able to stack up so many credits. But
yeah, it was very high value. That's
when did you start selling the credits, or when did you start making this a service?
When all of my friends got credits, they were not able to use themselves, and Uber started banning their account because Uber was thinking like they are getting credits like by some trick or something. So I was not able to fill their accounts also. So I was having extra credit. So I asked on my blog also, if somebody wants this, then they can pay me like some 20 rupees, 30 rupees also. Like minus them small thing, because it was for me for free. It was coming to me for free. So they started coming to me. Then I started selling for just small 30 cents, 40 cents. And then slowly I kept increasing my rate because there were more people asking me those credits. Then suddenly in India, they reduced that referral value to a minimum to like 50 rupees. So I was selling for 50 rupees and they were getting only 50 rupees credit. So nobody was buying in India.
Right.
Then I started exploring who can buy. Then I found out that this referral works across countries, like all over the world. So
Do you remember the day you realized that? Like, was it just you're sitting in your boxers that night and you're looking at it? You're like, holy shit, this actually... I can get 10 US dollars for this.
I don't remember. it just happened. I think 3 years back, something. Yeah, say 3 years back. Like one of my friend was also working with this, and there is another provider, Ola, here. So we were selling for that also, Ola also. And my friend was mostly into Ola, and I was in Uber. So we were not competing with each other. Just we were helping each other to promote this. So he was also searching for some users, buyers in US, but Ola is not available in US. Uber right. is available. So he suggested me few friends, like few customers. And I, from my blog also, few people came. Slowly, slowly, I got customers.
So how do you actually sell the credits? So your account has credits. How are you actually transferring those to the buyer?
I don't have any credits for me.
You get the referral code from the person and you earn them credits.
Yes. Let's say it's your account. If you give me your code, I will, on behalf of you, I'll refer some people, and they'll take ride or they'll take Uber, like they'll place any order and you'll get referral.
But are you still doing it? Okay. So first of all, how much traffic was your blog getting? And did you rank for like India Uber signup referral?
Yeah, it was coming at first position or second position, I guess, for that keyword.
How many people a day come to your site or were at the peak?
Not many, I guess. Per day, 1,000 people max.
Okay. So, 1,000.
So you were getting these referral credits initially from your friends, but at some point you must have run out of new friends to bring to Uber. So at what point did you find a new way to get riders in India? How did you do that?
Once I was getting constant purchase, like for orders, then I asked my friends, like other bloggers, how they do it. then there is a, like in Facebook groups are there. So few people were also, they are having similar idea of like as me. They're also selling the, I like talk to them and explore like how they are doing, how they're doing. Then I said, okay, I'll give you some money if you just manage it with among your friends, among your blogs, among your Facebook groups.
So somebody had said, oh, he's got a bunch of kids who will ride Uber rides all day. Like, you know, you go to a school and you say, hey kid, you know, 12-year-old kid, go ride this for 1 mile, please. Thank you very much. Here's 50 rupees. Is that what was happening, or it really was just friends?
That's what I thought. Because I, you could see the pic. You guys listening, I bought this, and right. A bunch of my friends did. And what happens is you get $10 credits. And by the way, and I talked to you about this. When you log into your site, it's super sketchy, or it seems like that, because English isn't your native language. And so it was, you know, it was clear that like right. You were.
I didn't buy because I got scared. I was like, yeah. I don't know what the hell this is.
I was like, it's clear this guy like is he's trying to. And so it looks quite sketchy. And I told you this, but when you, and I did it and it worked. It worked wonderfully. And I did it because I talked to you. But when you sign up, I see all these kids, like they seem like young boys. Like yeah, pop
who
up
are
and
these
I'm like,
kids? Who are these I'm kids
like,
that we shake?
Yeah, I'm like, this guy is going to a high school or something. He's getting these kids to take rides.
I have few people who work for me kind of, and they manage those kids. Like they sign up many accounts from there, because in India, Uber doesn't require credit cards. In US they require. So India, you just need to have a number to create an account. So few people, they create account so that other kids, they take ride. And you get referral bonus.
I see. So you just need a phone number, a new phone number. Hey, it's a new rider.
Yeah, it's new number is available. And there are several websites. They sell just number. In right. Number, you need just OTP. Just enter the number. You'll get OTP and account is created. Then
right.
Take a ride and referral is available.
So were you? So it was, in fact, like hand-to-hand combat kids. Like you were getting people signed up. It wasn't from the blog.
Initially, it was from blog. Then, yeah. To wow. Compete with the orders and others. Other people were there who were also selling. So the business. Now you need
did you,
to
did you have more supply or demand? So did you have more rides or more buyers?
It depends on time to time, because Uber keeps changing their policy and sometimes it stops everything. It doesn't work. Then, yeah, buyers are there, but no supply is there.
Right.
And then it starts supply is available, but no buyers.
So has
it's,
Uber,
keeps changing, yeah.
Did Uber ever contact you? Did they ever say, hey, what the hell's going on?
Uber didn't contact. I contacted Uber initially. I tweeted them like, if you give me 100 rupees per referral, I'll give you so many accounts so that you can show those number of accounts to someone like to get funding or something like that. But they never replied to me. Then I was not able to use myself. So I started selling. No option was there. Otherwise, I was going to sell to them only. Like, okay, give me some money. I'll market for you. That's it.
So you're forgetting a major part, or you're not forgetting, you haven't mentioned a major part of this. And this is a huge thing that I was a red flag to me, but I still did it, was A, you offer a discount if you pay with Bitcoin. And B, you have to change, if you're in America, which I imagine a lot of your customers are, you have to change your account to, where was it? What's the code? Maldives. So yeah, if you're in America, you have to change. You got to change your account to say that you are in the Maldives, not because I don't know why.
That's hilarious.
I think I don't know why you.
I'll explain. Those were some tricks you can say.
Workarounds.
In US, they were reducing referral value. Initially, it was $20, then $10, then $5. Then when it came to $5, nobody was buying from us. So we're right. Looking for how we can increase it. So we. Like somehow we like luckily we found like if you change country, your referral value will go to $10. Maybe $10 set default value in the Uber system. Like if there is no country set, it will be set to default like $10.
Okay. So you pick some obscure country and you just get the $10 as your
yeah.
default.
Yeah, so somewhere where Uber is not running. So initially we tried Sri Lanka, but after that they are like Uber is operating in Sri Lanka also. The in Sri Lanka referral value is set to Sri Lankan value, like some 100 rupees or something, Sri Lankan value. Then we found Maldives. And then any other country you can set where Uber is not there, Uber is not operating. Then it was setting default value to $10. But $10 is good value for everyone to buy. So they were buying.
I'm giddy talking about this.
Yeah, Sam's smiling like I've never seen him smile before.
I'll tell you why I'm giddy about this. But first, I want to make sure I say your name correctly. Sorry. Abhishek?
Yes, right.
I'm giddy about this because I don't know if I agree with the ethics of it. I don't know. What I think is amazing is how hard you hustled to do something. And I think the people like you who come up with these intricate, I'm not saying I feel this way, but let's say that a listener says this is a scam and you're a scammer, but even the balls that it took to do this and the operation that you built around this, I find incredibly fascinating. And I think the people who build amazing things often start out this way. And I just think that you're frankly inspiring. I think it's amazing.
100%. I think we had Greg on yesterday, and I think he was talking about like one of his earliest businesses was he sold a box of air on eBay and people just found it funny. So they bought the box of air on eBay. It's like learning how to connect the dots, learning how to make money on the internet, learning how to tap into people's, psychology and give them what they want. Those are sort of core underlying business skills. And so, the very first thing you said was this is a basic arbitrage. This could have been with Uber credits. It could have been with airline miles. It could have been with any system that's out there. If you discover a price discrepancy or a loophole in the way that the system is set up, that's an opportunity that you can take advantage of. Now, some people will say, hey, this isn't right. So, my brain goes down this checklist. First, I say, is this morally or ethically wrong to me? And, is anybody being harmed by this? From my understanding, nobody's being harmed by this. Was that correct? Or is that, are you sort of exploiting these high school kids and then sending them on rides to the mountains and then they have to walk back or something?
No. They're getting pocket money and a pocket expense. Right. Anyway.
And then the second thing is like, is this illegal? No, this is not illegal. Is this against the terms of service of Uber? Maybe, but it's on them to sort of enforce that if they're gonna allow this. Sounds like you literally reached out to them. You started this with a pure intent, which was to promote the Uber service, right? If I take you at face value, then I see nothing wrong with this myself personally, but we'll let other people be the judge.
I think I'm on board with this. I just think that because you're not a native English speaker, the site admittedly didn't come across wonderfully, but it's crazy. And I try to help you with it. I think I told you, right? I go, hey man, your site looks like you're not using the right words. And I even rewrote something for him.
yes. I keep updating it, but yeah, obviously.
So Abhishek, what are you doing now? You said that this is going to end soon or something like that. What makes you say that? And then what's next?
No, Uber keeps changing their policy. Like 2 days back, they said like now Uber ride referral is stopped totally all over world. June 29. So it's stopped. Now I need to look for some. I'm basically a software engineer, so I'll find some other things to do.
How old are you?
I'm 35.
Did you, how much does your apartment cost to rent a month in US dollars? You know, in US dollars?
Yeah, I think.
A few hundred
$300 bucks? Something.
Yeah.
Yeah, something 300.
And it in your service.
$350, yeah.
How much?
$350.
$350 US, and you at your peak were doing 20K a month.
Yeah, it was revenue, not all the profits.
Yeah,
but was it
close
profitable?
To 50% profit? Yeah, 50%. Yeah, okay, so close to 50% profit. Yeah,
so you were doing ballpark
120K a year,
50 times your monthly rent, right? Kind did I do that right? Yeah. Anyway, a lot. I don't know if I did that math right, but anyway, why did you grow up poor?
Kind of lower middle class.
And do you consider what are you now?
It's still the same. I'm not spending any much. I don't have a car. I don't have an apartment. Like it's rented apartment.
You're wearing an Apple Watch, I think. Your apartment looks pretty cool. I would say you're doing all right.
You just fascinate me, man. I would wonder, are you gonna do? I'm not. I would call this illegitimate what you did because it is a. I don't think it's wrong, but it is like a short term. Thing. Right. Are you going to build something? Yeah. Why don't you build something that's huge? Like something that can last because you're fucking awesome.
Yeah. When you think about what's next for you, do you think you'll try to do something similar, or do you think you'll try to do something that's different in some way, like, you know, your own service, a different, you know, something that has more enduring long-term value?
Yeah, definitely different from this, because in this field, it's keep getting, like, it's depending on someone else's business. If they're not doing good, I'm not doing good. It's depending on something. So trying to separate from them.
So something with less platform risk. Okay. All right. So Abhishek, here's what I want you to do, man. We're going to wrap this one up, but I want you to keep in touch with me and Sam. Let us know what you get working on next. We'd love to support you and help you, you know, help make that whatever that next thing is successful. And my hope is that you come back on in 6 months or a year and you say, hey, remember me? I'm the Uber pro guy. Okay. Here's what I did next. And it's even bigger and badder than what you've already done.
And the website is uberpro.in, right?
Yeah, right. Okay.
Great.
Uberpro.in, yeah. People and, think like that, it's like, yeah, it's scammy site due to the .in. It should be .com, then it, they think like it's
right.
Legitimate site, kind of.
It looks a lot better. I just went to the website right now. It looks a lot better. Your translation has gotten significantly better. It looks great. It just, you're a fascinating guy, man. You're cool.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for telling your story.
Okay, thanks.
Cool. Have a good day. Thank you.
All right. We got to say good night. It's midnight over there. We
gotta have
say
a good night. Yeah.
Good night. Then, sweet dreams.
Yeah. Dude, you're awesome. Cool. I appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. That guy's crazy. I love him.
Such a great little story. I just enjoy hearing those. Anytime I hear something like that, I love it.
I have a feeling that little segment is going to be very, very popular. I would love to hear what people think. I think that was fascinating. People can't see me, but I am smiling a lot.
Yeah, it's like Sam's wedding day over there. You just need to send in a photographer. He's ready to go. All right, what else you want to talk about today?
Hold on. I want to wrap this up. This guy, here's why this is fascinating to me. This guy, I love these guys who come from nothing and just do all types of crazy stuff to like build cool, interesting stuff, even if it is maybe unethical. I'm like, I'm gushing over this guy. I love these types of people. Okay, you want to move on?
Yeah.
Okay, first thing I want to talk about, people fleeing cities. I posted about this in the trends group. I posted about this on Twitter. I've gotten roughly 200 to 300 replies. I put my 30-day notice in to my apartment, and I'm located in San Francisco. A report was released for June numbers. San Francisco's rent is down another 11%. Sean, do you think that cities are going to change, or like some of the major expensive cities, so New York, San Francisco, I don't know what else, do you think that they're going to change forever?
Forever is a long time. It's hard to say. But I would say that, like, you sort of have to ask, okay, what would get it to return to bigger and badder heights than it was? And I think what was driving the San Francisco value sort of originally was the like kind of culture and the like, you know, the eclectic mix of people that lived in San Francisco. This was like, you know, sort of early days of San Francisco. That went away as the core reason people came to the city. And then it got replaced with tech. And it's pretty clear that the tech movement has migrated away from Silicon Valley, not just because coronavirus, but in general, you know, cost of living getting higher and higher and higher, as well as just winners coming out of Sweden and Israel and other places. It became clear, like, look, you don't have to be based out of Silicon Valley to A, raise money, or B, be successful. New York has had winners, LA has had winners, and you know, a bunch of European countries have had winners, Atlassian in Australia, you know, Canva in Australia. So I think already that was happening, and this was just a turbo. This was an amplifier. So no, I don't think that San Francisco, for example, is going to be the hub for is going to be a bigger hub than it was in the past, you know, few years. I think it'll still probably be the biggest tech hub there is. It's just, it will be smaller in size. Some of its weight will have gotten distributed out to Austin and New York and LA and other places that are benefiting from this.
I believe that the numbers are being underreported at the moment. And it's strictly, what's it called when you just hear stories, anecdotal?
Yeah.
Because I posted in this group and I had James Altucher replied and he goes, half my building's vacant. Another person said, two thirds of my thing is vacant. When I try to book a moving company, they're packed. They're packed.
Were you the one who posted like, you called a moving company about moves from California to Florida? Was that you or was that someone else?
Not me.
I think it was either Dave Grossblatt or you, or I forgot who it was. Maybe it was my friend Kamar. Somebody posted, they had talked to somebody about, they talked to a moving company about moving from, moves from California to Florida.
I saw that.
And, you know, normal volume was, let's say, 50 in a month. And now they're doing 500 a month and they can't keep up with it. They're turning people away because they just can't handle as many moves that are migrating, you know, to greener pastures. And so, you know, these are the leading signals that you see. And it makes sense. Like, I myself moved out of the city. I know tons of people that are either already moved, considering moving, or not planning on planting roots in the same way that they were 6 months ago, which is kind of wild because that's a very short amount of time for such a big migration.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. So let me talk about a few opportunities there are, which is, first of all, when I'm moving, I'm trying to figure out my tax situation. Which state do I, right. Am I going to call home? It's all about your intent. And there's a bunch of things that you can do. For example, getting a mailbox in a different state. So virtual mailboxes are kind of intriguing to me at the moment. The second thing is you have to declare to the state of California or whatever state you're leaving that you are no longer a resident. Right. And there's a ton of manual things you have to do, like contacting the DMV. There's a few more things, whatever.
Sure.
And that's pretty interesting. I'm curious what's going to happen with that. Did I show you this? The founder of Ship, is it Shipt? It's a it's that thing that sold to Target for $500 million. It was like a.
I'm not familiar.
Okay, so it's called Shipt.
Okay.
So it was basically like Instacart, but for the South. The founder's name was Bill Smith. He sold it for $400 or $500 million. Huge win. And he has a new company. It's called, Landing. And what Landing does is they have a network of apartments across the country and they're all pretty similar and you pay a fee and you get access to all the apartments. And so if you go to their website now, you can go to,
Landing.
Yeah. Landing. So if you type in, let's see, I typed in, hello landing.com.
Okay.
So you go, it's pretty fascinating. It's super interesting. So they're clearly appealing to these 20, 30 year old young people who have a little bit of money. You can sign up. They've got 13 major cities. You pay $200 for a yearly membership, and then you select a variety of furnished apartments, and then you get like a slight discount on staying there for a month at a time. So for example, they have a $3,000 two bedroom apartment that's available July 2nd in Austin. And then you could spend a little bit more money and go to DC, things like that. Super interesting.
Yeah, this is cool. So this is basically corporate housing because you're getting furnished turnkey apartments, but it's without the corporate. It's like they just put the power in the hand of the individual who may or may not be doing this as part of a corporate relocation. This might just be a lifestyle relocation like you're doing right now. So you're going to use this.
Well, I, at the moment, because of Corona, I don't want to be in an apartment. I only want to be in a home, a house.
Yep.
So yes, or an apartment with a private entrance. But like you can rent a place in LA, a one bedroom for $2,500 a month right now on this website. And it's all furnished.
Hmm.
Very fascinating. Now there's a lot of holes in this model, but this is something that is very attractive to me and very interesting.
And Sonder is kind of similar, right?
Yeah, but they're not doing so hot because they were corporate travel. And there's rumors, I think they laid off a ton of people. There's rumors that they're going to go out of business.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then there's another one called Guild, started by a friend of mine, maybe The Guild or Guild. And they do the same thing, but it's also for corporate travel. Whereas this is more so for nomadic-y type of people.
Right.
Very fascinating. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I like the idea. I think it's kind of one of those ideas that's either going to seem obvious in retrospect, or you never hear about it again. So I think that it makes sense that more people are going to be doing this. The question is it enough? I like the membership model, right? Like, I think that's kind of a core difference from, you know, okay, well, if I'm going to move, I'll just go and do my search, whatever. But like, once I'm in this network, then I'm just going to keep picking apartments in this network. But And you know, I think you're trying to move like whatever every month. Most people are probably not trying to do that.
I'm not going to do that for a long time.
Right. So I think, you know, the question is like, what is the like length of stay, and are they pricing these above what it would be if I did a year long lease and they're making more off it per month due to the flexibility? Okay. I could believe that, but then it's, you know, it's questionable if the economics are going to work, right? Because you're going to have vacancies where, you know, there's gaps of renting, and have you, you know, do the economics work based on how many people are trying to do this at all times? You know, it's one of those situations, unlike Airbnb, where for Airbnb, they don't pay to lease all the places. So when demand goes down, sure, their revenue goes down, but their cost basis also goes down. Whereas for these guys, their costs are going to be fixed essentially because they're going to be locked into all these leases. So they can't withstand kind of the normal demand fluctuations that other Airbnb type site could do.
Yeah, I'm interested. I agree with everything you've said. We'll see. What do you got?
Okay, let me tell you about some things that I found kind of interesting. So you wanted to talk a little bit about levels, and we've mentioned it before. Tell me what's interesting about levels. So levels, for those who are either new or you don't remember, at one point in time, me and Sam did this 1 month weight loss challenge where we installed a continuous glucose monitor on our arm, and it measured, you know, how is your glucose spiking based on what you eat. And the way this challenge was organized by this guy, Justin Mayers, was if your glucose level stays below a certain level, meaning you're not eating sugary carb foods, he will essentially return a deposit. We made a deposit of like $800 at the beginning of the month. Every day that we ate right, he would send Venmo us money back. And it was a cool idea. It was a fun challenge. It wasn't super well run, but it was also, both of us walked away being like, yeah, well, this is the future. I'm going to have a device implanted on my body that tells me how my body's doing in real time. And so Levels is a company that's trying to productize that. So what did you find interesting here? Why'd you put Levels back on?
Yeah, this app is not in the App Store. It's
TestFlight.
Yeah, it's in TestFlight, levelshealth.com. So yep. The background here is, so people who have diabetes have either have to prick themselves every certain amount of time, hours or days, I don't know, and test their blood glucose. And there's a company, it's like the huge health company, I forget what it's called, probably Pritzker does it, I mean, whatever the huge conglomerates are. They have this machine called a Freestyle Libre.
Abbott
is the name. Abbott, that's the one. It's a huge conglomerate, it's just a big thing. And it's this thing that you put into your arm and it tracks your blood glucose like with a 30-second delay. And
For 2 weeks.
And if you have diabetes, people use this all the time. Now, the problem is if you're just a nerd like me and you just want to test this and you don't have diabetes, you actually have to get a doctor's prescription. You can't buy this. I don't know why that's the case. Maybe there's some great rule behind it. I'm not educated on it. But what Levels is trying to do is...
To clarify, I think you can buy it. You just aren't subsidized by insurance, so it's more expensive, right?
But maybe you can buy it from one of those like penis enlargement pills websites or like something like that. But I don't think that you can go on to Abbott.com and buy it, or FreestyleLibre.com or Libre.com and buy it. Right. I'm almost positive you can't. And I don't know why it's so hard, but it is. And so what Levels is doing is they're doing two things. One, they're giving you an app that you can make it easy to track your levels, your blood levels, and they're trying to eventually create the hardware for it. And I think this is just incredibly fascinating. I think these guys are raising money now, and I think it might be something to bet on. I don't know yet though, but it's really cool. What do you think?
It reminds me of, like, if you had just told me the idea, I would have been like, oh my God, I gotta invest in this. After doing it for 2 weeks, first of all, at the time, now maybe it was just early on, their app kind of sucked. It wasn't like the normal, out of the box Freestyle Libre app was just better to use.
Totally.
First, you had to use it because that's how the scanner works. And so this was like, first scan it in this app and then open the Levels app to like see it in a prettier chart. And I didn't find it prettier nor useful at all. I think the dream for them is it's a great visualization. It gives you tips as you go, and you do your food tracking, your meal logging in it. But the meal logging was super clunky when we used it, so I never logged my meals in it because I was like, this is too cumbersome. So I was unimpressed by the actual thing at the time. But I think this idea is amazing. I think that it's going to have really high retention for the people that opt into this lifestyle. And so I'm a believer in the concept behind this business. I would build a business like this myself. I'm like that much of a believer in it. And it also reminds me, like, there's a company that just sold for $500 million yesterday, I think, called Mirror. Did you see this? Are you familiar with Mirror? So it's
Very.
It's this thing you put on your wall. It's an actual mirror. That's sort of like a home gym that you plant on the wall. And there's two of these that are out there that I know of. Tonal is one and Mirror is the other. So Mirror got bought by Lululemon yesterday for $500 million. And, you know, on the surface is like one of those really hard businesses. It's like hardware, new behavior for customers, really expensive. And so you could see all these different ways that it was going to fail. And this this female founder who did it and the VCs who backed it, it paid off. And it got bought by Lululemon for a really great exit. And I think that something like Levels has the potential to be that. If they can build the really awesome consumer, kind of like the health conscious consumer, what they want, that's more than a Fitbit, that's more than an Apple Watch. It's actually tracking their glucose levels. I think they could end up getting bought right back by a company like Abbott or by one of the sort of big, you know, either health or fitness companies that are out there. So I think it's a good bet as a business. I wasn't in love with the product.
I agree on everything you said. I think that what the problem it's solving is twofold for me. The first thing is nutritional information and calorie information on a lot of packaged foods and normal foods. Do you realize how wildly inaccurate that is? Like it could be like 20 or 30% off. Like it's pretty off. Like if you go, I remember Casey Neistat did this thing where he took a Big Mac. He took like five different Big Macs and he's like, all right, it says on the package that this is how much calories is in it. And then he actually, you know, a calorie is one calorie is the amount of energy it takes to heat up, I believe, a gram of water, one Celsius in temperature.
Yep.
And so they like did that test and like, oh, wow, these are off by like 10 or 20%. And it was pretty interesting. I think that that's an interesting thing to look into. I also think that carbohydrates and protein and your different macros and nutrient information, it impacts people differently. Like, right. And I think that that's interesting to see what fits you best.
Right.
And
what triggers your responses versus not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in general, anytime you can take something that has a really long feedback loop and give people an immediate feedback loop, that's the foundation of a great product. Like if that's the only thing your product did, you can win. And that's what this does. It gives you a really fast feedback loop on how what you eat affects your body. And I think that's both really important. And I think it'll be really compelling if it can get productized. Now, maybe these guys will do it, or maybe they'll make 30% of the way progress. But like, to me, this is inevitable. There will be a company like this. It will be uber successful. This will be very normal for people to have on their body at all times in some form factor, whether it's a patch on your arm or it's a, you know, a ring or a watch or something like that. But, and I think specifically the glucose monitoring, to me is more interesting than sleep tracking, step counting, you know, temperature, you know, all that other stuff that's potential like for you to track because it's related to eating. And if you can affect the way that people eat, you can change their whole life.
I'm in. What do you got?
So here's one thing that I found interesting. Alt data. So what is alt data? So there's this market that I didn't really know existed, but it made sense when I heard it, which is alternative data that people buy. So the alt data market is like $2 to $3 billion a year right now. And what this means is, let's say you're a trader, you're on Wall Street, or you're a hedge fund manager. You are constantly looking for an edge. You're looking for alpha, as they say. So how do you have an edge on the market so that you can get better returns than the average, right? Because you're charging fees to your customer to manage their money. So you have to beat the sort of passive indexing that they could just get by being in the market as a whole. So turns out there's a huge market for alt data and where people are buying, you know, one of the following. It could be satellite imagery. So for example, you can look at crop yields in different countries and you can know how the commodity prices are going to be affected and how that affects Starbucks because they require these beans over here. You can look at mobility data. So that's what's happening right now for people who are betting on the economy to recover. So Google and Apple have these charts that show how much people are using Google Maps, which shows how much they're moving around right now. And that's a key indicator of like commerce activity. So a lot of the people who are betting on the economy, they're trying to figure out, all right, are we about to go into shelter in place 2.0 or are people getting out and about and the economy is about to recover? It's really financially important to know that. So they're buying mobility data. They're buying, you know, other sources of data, which is like Robinhood. One of their core business models is they sell I forget what it's called, like flow data or whatever. Basically, they sell the transaction data of what people are trying to buy on Robinhood to these quant funds who will then front run the market in many ways. They'll see that, okay, a bunch of retail traders are going to buy Tesla. Cool. Let's go buy Tesla faster than they can, and we'll get the uplift of this retail traffic that's coming in. So there's all these different alt data sources. And I just thought this is a really interesting business to do one of two things. Either A, you could build a alt data market, where a marketplace where basically people could put their source of data, and buyers could come and browse the different satellite providers, the different mobility providers, like whatever. And you can sort of pitch what your thing does, and they could pay to get in contact with you to vet your stuff. And then there could
That's
be
cool.
a reputation market around it. The other thing that I thought was interesting was just what other alt data sources could exist that you could bring to market and monetize in a way that's not being monetized yet. So I think some of this is new, right? Like cell phones unlocked a whole bunch of passive data sources, that passive data that didn't exist before, because now you have everybody with a GPS and a microphone and other, you know, tools on them. So I'm curious what other alt data sources might exist that could tip people off to make better financial decisions, or, you know, at least for Wall Street, because that's where the big bucks are.
That's pretty interesting. And so sometimes at The Hustle, people, like crazy people, will email me and they're like, oh, you're selling my data. And I'm like, I'm not selling your data, because I literally don't even know how to do that. Like, I'm like,
if I could, I would.
Well, like, I'm like, maybe like selling data inherently isn't wrong. I mean,
like someone on your email list. Is that what you mean?
Well, they'll get like spam, and they'll think that somehow I sold their email address, which not even a chance. I never did that. Which I know how to do that. I know how to sell an email list, but I don't know how to like sell insights or data. I mean, I don't even know who would buy it. I don't even know if it's valuable. I know nothing.
Right.
But that's cool. That's a cool idea
you have. A great one is Second Measure, which basically takes credit card data. And so people know, okay, DoorDash is beating Uber Eats because they can look at the Second Measure data and they can see, you know, who's doing more credit card transactions out of those different companies. So VCs are using this. You know, for example, I think one that would be awesome that's not public is cloud usage. So whose AWS bills are going up? And if you somehow knew whose web traffic is going up, or whose bandwidth is going up, or whose consumption is going up on AWS, I think that would be a really interesting signal to use to invest in companies or sectors as a whole. So I'm just trying
That's
to think
cool.
of what are some different alt data sources. And I don't have a ton, you know, but I think that this is interesting, and the way these are used are different. Like you had told me your dad's in the like kind of produce farming market, sort of.
Yeah. And they do. And he's got like a small, medium sized business. And so they're not using significant data, but they definitely use the weather and they use some futures and things like that. But yeah.
And so I think that there's a lot that's in agriculture where people are selling specific weather data, like more specific than the sort of general weather data, and also just general yield data that they have across the agriculture market for individuals in that space. And so I think that's kind of interesting too. So I'm curious. I know that for example, in sports, there's Synergy Sports, which measures all the court movement of basketball players on the court. Now, this is I think it's available, or it's bought by every single NBA team, because no NBA team can just afford to like not have the data when the other 29 teams are doing it. And so these guys, literally just by installing cameras on the backboard in all 30 arenas, they now have something that's proprietary that they can sell for millions of dollars to NBA teams, just to say, hey, here's a data set that you can go and hopefully make better scouting decisions or game plan decisions based off of.
I'm looking at this now. This is crazy. Synergy Sports.
Yeah.
This is awesome. It's owned by a company called an Atrium Sports Company. What is Atrium Sports?
I have no idea.
That's amazing. I never, ever would have thought. It looks like it might be a public company. I never would have thought that this was a thing.
And I love simple ideas like that where, you know, it's not rocket science. I think they get exclusive partnerships, and also the teams don't want multiple cameras having to be installed in their space or whatever. And so, and then they have like tremendous pricing power over the teams once they have the data. And so, the richer their data set, like the longer they're installed, the worse the switching costs are if they ever want to use another provider, right? Because, okay, we could use this other provider, but then we lose the last 10 years of historical data that we might use to find patterns or make better decisions. And so I think a company like Synergy Sports is a simple company that's very well positioned in this market.
So Synergy Sports was either owned or co-owned by Mark Cuban, and he sold it, and the company sold it to Atrium Sports for $90 million.
Interesting. I think it's worth a lot more now because this is sort of a more recent trend. Okay, another thing to follow up on that's sort of sports related. So we had talked about Jack's idea of a baseball card sort of Fort Knox, and you know, a place to store and trade baseball cards without ever having moved hands. And then a whole bunch of people reached out after the podcast, which is great. Love it when they do that, to be like, "Hey, you ever heard of Freeports?" And I was like, "Well, no, I've never heard of that shit. What is it?" And basically what Freeports are, this is my like very brief Googling afterwards, but I was like, "Oh, I should mention this. I should close the loop on this." So a Freeport is an art storage warehouse. So basically people do this for art. So it does two core things. You buy a piece of art, it gets stored in a Freeport, and they handle like sort of the whole storage process so your art doesn't get damaged, doesn't get stolen. It's like, you know, state-of-the-art security, that sort of thing. But the main benefit, the reason people do this, is because art can't be, when you buy a painting for $80 million, which people do, believe it or not, you have to pay sales tax. You have to pay tax on that purchase. And so that could be, you know, $4 or $5 million. And so how do you avoid paying that tax? Well, you only owe tax once it's landed in your destination. So a Freeport is considered to be in transit for an indefinite amount of time. So what they do is you buy a piece of art, it goes to the Freeport, it's in transit for 20, 30 years. So it's a way to preserve wealth across like decades and not have to pay the tax until you sort of want the tax to be due. And then you could actually just sell it to somebody else who will keep it in the Freeport. And then you sort of move on without ever having to like use the art as like get the art out. And so I thought this was really interesting. I had never heard about this. I bet there's either software you could build around this or marketplaces for these or you know, some kind of, you know, sharing economy version of Freeports. Like, I don't know enough about it, but it definitely made my ears perk up. And if somebody out there wants to go do a bunch of research on Freeports, I would love for you to come in our Facebook group and post what you found, because I think this is very interesting.
Okay. So, I'm looking up, this is awesome. Love this. So there's a one called Geneva Freeport. The Economist has a bunch of really cool articles about it. The headlines are very clickable. It's like the largest art collection for the uber rich that you'll never see. Right. And it's in Geneva's in, I'm ignorant, Switzerland, right? Geneva, Switzerland.
I think so.
This Freeport company, Geneva Freeport, it had 250 employees, and it had sales of 70 million. I don't know what that is. Is that a Swiss franc? I don't know what, I think that's what that is. Abreu is saying yes. So that's a 70 million francs. I don't know what the conversion is.
Right.
And it sold recently for a lot of money. Fascinating.
Yeah. So I think there's more needs to be looked into that. Okay. One last thing I wanted to bring up, because we got 5 minutes left. Unless you have one. If you have one, you should go.
No, I'm obsessed with Freeports now.
Sam Freeport Bar. All right. So the last thing is, I had this conversation yesterday. I just wanted to share this. I put this in our Facebook group, but
yeah, I wasn't sure if you were able to talk about that.
It's going to be kind of a tease. So sorry, but whatever. But I still think there's some lessons to be learned. All right. So I was talking to somebody yesterday, a very credible person. They sold their last company for over $80 million. And they were talking about what's next. And they said something, you know, we were talking about how we're thinking about, you know, what the next chapter looks like. And he goes, yeah, you know, I ask myself this question, which is, how do I build something in 2 weeks that's going to make me $5 million in the next 2 months? And literally the other people that were there just started laughing, because they're like, what? Like, that's not a thing. And he's like, no, I think it is a thing. And he's like, you know, I didn't know the answer, but like, I asked myself the question, I believe that it was possible. He's like, and so I got a bunch of ideas. And he started rattling off the ideas. And the very first idea, I was like, holy fuck, this is actually going to work. Like, I would actually bet that the idea he said would work, which is crazy, because like, even if that idea had a 10% chance of working, it would be totally worth doing it. If it had a 1% chance, it'd be worth doing it. I think this idea has like a 50% chance of working. And after it happens, I will come back on here and I will be like, that was the idea. that I was referencing. But so I can't talk about the idea. I can't say who it was, but I will say, I think there's something very powerful to asking yourself this question. You know, one of my like kind of Seanisms is ask a better question, get a better answer. And so instead of saying, oh, what do I want to do with my life? What should my career be? What do I want to work on? Ask a better question. And so his better question was, what can I build in 2 weeks? Oh, and also it was with no code. So what can I build in 2 weeks with using only no code tools that will make me $5 million in 2 months? And so he first started hunting down, what are examples of things that are making $5 million, you know, across a 2 month time span? And he found a bunch of examples. And then he worked off of those to figure out what could he build that's not that, but similar, has similar properties. Alex Tu, who's the guy who created Million Dollar Homepage, did the same thing. He was 18 years old and he asked himself a question. How do I make $1 million? I think he also said in a month, like, how do I become a millionaire in a month? And the idea that came to him was Million Dollar Homepage, and it actually worked. He actually pulled it off in the next like 2 months. So what do you think of this? And do you ever ask yourself questions like this? Or am I just crazy?
A little bit. I ask myself, I think of like what my long-term goals are, and I'm like, how do I get this done just like this year?
Right.
I do that all the time.
What's my 10-year plan? How do I do it in one?
Yeah. I ask myself that all the time. But I think that most people are shocked that these silly questions have true answers.
Right.
And there's many examples of this happening. So for example, the Sam Ware brothers, they own Rocket Internet. They cloned eBay, but in Germany, and sold it back to eBay in 90 days for $50 million. Right. And I think that if someone wanted to say, I'm going to abandon my family, I'm going to abandon my health, I'm going to abandon my friends, and I'm only going to do something for 6 months, I think they'd be shocked at what can happen. Now, they're going to pay the price. You got to pay a price for what you get. But I think it is great. That's a great question. And I'm going to tell my company that.
So we had done a version of this like on the podcast once, which was if you had to make $1,000 like either today or like in the next 48 hours, how would you make $1,000? And you can't use any, like you only have like $100 budget. I think you were like, I would buy bottled waters. I would go to a place and I would sell, you know, every bottle of water that I'm buying for 20 cents for $3. And I would just go in front of a hot area. And I know I could make $1,000. I've done it before. Right. That was like your answer to that.
Yeah. So I by the way, I made $5,000 this weekend, and I didn't make $5,000 because I sold all my gym equipment.
There you go.
And I sold a bunch of used clothing. But the gym equipment we sold, because I bought a lot of it used and there's a huge demand. I got 300 or 400 replies on Craigslist from it. So I made I profited a couple grand. Gross $5,000.
Yeah. And Gary Vee's always talking about this, like, okay, go hunt free Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace and thrift shop or whatever, and then go list everything on eBay. And like, you can make $250 a day doing that. And like, go show me your hustle. And he like does this whole fucking hustle.
That's just hard ass work.
Yeah. It's hard ass work.
And so I think the first question, why do you get 5 million in 30 days?
Yeah, exactly. So you're probably going to work the same level of difficulty just with the bigger price. So, okay. So let's play the game. Let's say you need to make $1 million in the next month. What do you do? And you can't use any of your existing assets to do it.
I'll give you
a budget of 10 grand.
If I had to use an existing asset, I would for sure do a course on how to start a newsletter. I would bet my life that would do it.
You can use your brain, sure, but you can't use your like hustle email list, for example.
I would have to use that. I don't know, man. That's a hard-ass question. Can you answer yours first? Because you already discussed this.
Well, no. I just thought of it just now. But let's both brainstorm it on the spot. I think that's the sort of real way to do it. So, okay. So what are some things that I would do? I think partially like this guy, I would look at things that are already generating that amount. And I would see, okay, is there a riff on this that I can use to make that happen? So, for example, is there something in the, you know, for example, I know a guy who's making a lot of money in crypto right now. And what he's doing is sort of arbitraging between exchanges and liquidity pools to make money there. Okay. Can that scale up to get to the $1 million? Okay. Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe. That's really complicated.
Is there an app that I could use? Is there an app that I could build, right? Like, you know, the weather app, an alarm clock app, like some stupid, simple app that I could do, a meditation app that I, a sleep sound app that I could build that could generate that type of revenue in that short amount of time well, I think I'd probably have to pay too much for the marketing of it. So in my 10 grand budget, I can't do it. So the constraint really is the 10 grand budget. Okay, how do I do that?
I think you have to make something that a business will buy from you. Like they would buy the asset. So like...
as a customer, you mean, not like acquire it. Because acquisition will take too long.
Well, yeah. But well, what is like an immediate need? So like if someone's like, I need more customers, it's like, hey, I built this database. I think there might be some customers here. But like if you had to use no code, you'd have to like...
You don't have to use no code. You just $10,000.
I would have to because I can't code.
Right.
Fuck, that's hard.
You can recruit someone. You can convince someone.
I mean, I guess you could do real estate and try to like finagle like a contract on something, but I don't know how to do that. So
So that's one way. So what you could do is you can... You could go hunt for a property that is sort of distressed in some way. You could get the right to buy it and not, you know, you get it under contract without putting your money down yet. And then you can simultaneously find a buyer for that property that's because they're not marketing it the right way. And you could basically do the buy sell in the same day without ever putting the money into the deal.
Wholesaling. Abreu corrected you. It's called wholesaling.
That's called wholesaling? Properties?
Yeah, wholesaling real estate. You just flip the contract. It's flipping without doing any of the work.
Yeah, exactly. So you know you could do something like that, but that's not what I would do. What would I actually do? I would try to design something that goes viral, right? Because for $10,000, I'm not going to be able to get distribution through any paid means. So I need something that's going to spread virally and then net me some money at the end. So
it's got to be a digital good, though. You can't be selling like deodorant.
Yeah, exactly. So what could go viral that's going to be a digital thing? You know, maybe there's a variant of the $1 million homepage type of idea that you could do. Maybe you could do a physical product. So maybe you could do a physical product that you actually don't make yet. You just pre-sell it. So that would still fit within the bounds, but it'd have to be a viral product that would spread without you doing paid marketing. So you could do like a Kickstarter type of project and pre-sell $1 million and use the 10 grand just to make the video of the product that you're going to make. So I'd have to come up with a product like that.
Dude, maybe this Freeporting thing would get that.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come into the next episode and I'm going to have my answer to this question. I'm going to have a great answer. I'm going to have an answer that if I listen to it, I'd be like, fuck, I should go do that. And so I'm going to make that my homework for this thing. I'm going to give myself the weekend basically to come up with my answer for it. And I think you should do it too. And Abreu,
that would be such a fun experiment to do.
And then we should do it.
I have admittedly an unfair advantage. Like we did a course and I don't know if I want to do courses ever again, but it was like wildly profitable and people loved it, but that for sure would work.
Yeah. But I think we have to do it without using the assets. I think that's the real sort of creative test, because otherwise it doesn't really apply to most people because they don't have the unfair advantage you have to begin with, which is like whatever millions of people who read your emails. So I think you need to do it without it.
I get that. But if I were to do this, I would absolutely use that because I'm like, this works.
Okay. Abreu with a good idea. Okay. So you create a campaign called 1 million masks. And you are going to give away masks for free to people who need it to prevent coronavirus. And you convince the brands to put their logo on it and pay for the masks. And let's say the mask is 50 cents. You charge a dollar for the mask to the brand or $1.50. You pocket the dollar and you need to get 1 million masks paid for by brands in the meantime to do it. So you tap into something timely where brands are looking to put their stamp on something and be a part of contribute to the cause.
This is such an interesting thing.
All right. Are you down to come back with your answer to this? And also, Abreu, are you down?
That was my answer. That's a good one.
All right. But I'm giving you extra time. If that's the best answer you come up with, you just come back and say it again. But if you come up with a better answer by our next recording, then you got to say it on air.
All right. I got you.
All right. Cool. That's how this podcast can go viral, by the way. We just put our money where our mouth is. We say, hey, we did this brainstorm thing. And by the way, for the next month, every episode is just the progress of doing that thing and reaching the million.
this is so much work, but viral. I'm down. I'm very interested. Hey,
there's a prize. You can make $1 million this month. It's not work for nothing.
Do you consider yourself lazy?
Yes.
Same.
To the point of like it being a negative.
Same. I'm like, so much work.
I remember I applied when I moved to Silicon Valley. I was applied to the job at Monkey Inferno for the Idea Lab, and I had made like a resume, like a website resume. I basically went all in for them. I made a website. It was my resume. It was about them, tailored to them. And one of the sections was, I made it like a video game where I was like, here's my attributes. Like if you go in Madden or whatever, it's like speed 99, this whatever 92. And so I did it for all my business attributes. And work ethic was my lowest attribute. It was like a 5 out of 10 or whatever it was, like a, you know, 55 out of 100. And during the interview, the guy was like, this whole website thing was great. Like, but why did you say your work ethic was bad? Like, I've never seen somebody come into an interview and say, I'm not that hard of a worker. Like,
but I'm honest. What's that all about?
I was like, yeah, I'm honest. Like that. I'm not, I'm just not. I was like, there's other people who are, but like, you know, that's not what I do. I don't try to work the hardest. I do try to work the smartest, but I actively try not to work the hardest.
There's this like quote where Bill Gates, he says something like, yeah, like the best hackers are super lazy and that's why they invent stuff. It's because they don't want to do the same thing over and over again.
Right. Yeah. They find the quickest path to the solution.
Well, let's wrap it up. Tweet cool. at us. Let us know what you think.
Give me your answers. I'm coming back Monday with great answers. All right. See ya.
And let us know what you guys think about this first segment. I think that I'm inspired by this guy, to be honest. I love meeting people like that. That was inspiring to me.
Yeah, that was a good scheme. That one almost pulled it off for him.
Actually, yeah.
Cool. All right. I got to run.